church? Hell no. Are you no longer feeling comfortable in church? This podcast is for individuals who are desperately missing God, but don't know how to find Him. Substance abuse, domestic violence, sex offenses, acrimonious divorce can contribute to discomfort in the church. For these individuals, church is just not an option anymore. Ordained minister Dennis Hall and his guests invite you to listen to this podcast for topics that are inspiring, uplifting, and will bring hope to those who just feel church is not relevant in their lives today.
Hello, I'm Dr. Dennis Hall, and I am delighted that you're listening to this podcast today. It's been interesting the last few days of things going on. You know, last week I was had the opportunity to talk extensively about these college protests and the trials involving the former president and the southern border immigration policies and how greed and power played a role in these events. I want to ask you a question today. Are you basically a greedy person? You know, it could be that you are, and it could be that sometimes you are and sometimes you're not. And then on the other hand, it could be that you're not, You know, the dictionary defines greed as this insatiable desire for material gain, sometimes for social value or status or power. I heard a story one time about a farmer who had bought the farm right next to his, and his friend asked him how much farmland he wanted. And his response was he only wanted what was next to his farm. In other words, he was expressing an insatiable desire for more. You know, the seven deadly sins were first enumerated back in the 6th century by Pope Gregory, and then it was elaborated on later in the 13th century by St. Thomas Aquinas. And along with greed, the deadly sins include pride, wrath, lust, envy, gluttony, and sloth. In the scripture, we find many, many admonitions against greed. In Proverbs 15:27, we read, "Those who are greedy for unjust gain make trouble for their households, but those who hate bribes will live." Then over in the New Testament, Jesus uses the parable of the rich fool to teach against amassing wealth. And he prefaces the story with this warning: "Take care. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions." That was Luke 12:15. You know, love of money is also cautioned against in the first letter of Paul to Timothy, where it's called the root of all kinds of evil. And then, you know, St. Thomas Aquinas, who I've already referred to, you know, he wrote that greed is a sin. Why? Because it spins off other sins, such as treachery, fraud, falsehoods, perjury, restlessness, violence, and insensibility to mercy. So, these early scripture writers were focused on the problem of greed. You know, some writers feel that greed is as old as time itself, and that as long as there are people, greed will continue to exist. You know, in ancient Greece, they had a special word for greed: pleonexia. Pleonexia. Pleonexia is a concept that unites greed and covetousness and avarice in sort of a philosophical context. And strictly speaking, it's just the insatiable desire to have what rightfully belongs to others. You know, in other words, ruthless selfishness, you know, the arrogant assumption that other people and their things are there to be taken advantage of. It's this idea, pleonexia, is a disease in the sense that it's not just greed in the usual sense, but it's the insatiable desire to acquire or collect or obtain something, whether it's money, property, or power. It's you know, people who suffer from this are in a constant state of dissatisfaction, controlled by a feeling of never having enough. Now, this form of greed is not about money or possessions, but it's about the endless accumulation of money and possessions. You know, I guess we could consider it some form of neurosis, you know, some form of a mental illness. And that's exactly how the ancient Greeks viewed it. Aristotle wrote about it as a symptom of a disturbed soul, a symptom of a disturbed soul. You know, the principle of greed as some kind of pathology is found regularly in historical and scriptural texts. You know, in Ecclesiastes 5:10, we read, "Whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income." Theologians and historians throughout the ages have warned about the psychology of greed as a defect of mankind. And then something strange happened in contemporary times. For the first time in history, greed has become a virtue. In the past, as I've been talking, you know, greed was considered a sin, evil, an evil sin. But in our time, that's no longer the case. You know, it seems that over the last 50 years that greed has become a positive characteristic that's in the best interest of the people and our country. Now, it's very interesting just to reflect, and you say, well, where did all this begin? And, you know, perhaps it all began with the writings of the famous economist Adam Smith in the 1700s. You know, as an undergraduate student studying economics, we were introduced to Adam Smith, who was considered the father of capitalism. He famously wrote about an invisible hand that guides the free markets. You know, Adam Smith, he really focused and argued that, and as an example, that a greedy landlord who's driven by greed is providing the necessities of life to his tenants, therefore advancing the interest of society, the greedy landlord. And, you know, there's kind of a philosophy that has evolved and grown in our society where there's a glorification of greed. In the movie Wall Street, maybe some of you saw that, maybe after this podcast, you may want to go back and watch it. The movie Wall Street, we meet this iconic character, Gordon Gekko, who is played by Michael Douglas. And this villain, Gekko, he's the embodiment of the film when he gives this infamous greed is good speech. It went something like this. "The point is, ladies and gentlemen, that greed, for the lack of a better word, is good. Greed is right. Greed works. Greed clarifies, cuts through, and captures the essence of the evolutionary spirit. Greed in all its forms, greed for life, for money, for love, knowledge, has marked the upward surge of mankind." Now, sadly, this performance in this movie was based on a real speech that was given, a famous lecture in 1986, by a famous stock trader, Ivan Boisky, who said, among other things, to the graduating class of the business school at Berkeley, he said, "I think greed is healthy. You can be greedy and still feel good about yourself." Now, it's interesting that Boisky, shortly thereafter, was fined $100 million and later went to prison for insider trading. Now, Nobel Prize-winning American economist Milton Friedman, you know, he was probably the first to try to give greed a place in state policy when he wrote, "The problem of social organization is how to set up an arrangement under which greed will do the least harm." Capitalism, he said, is that kind of system. Now, the good news is that despite humanity's tendency toward greed, we also see this unparalleled success of our species to cooperate. You know, in this modern age, we can travel to any continent, feed the billions of people on our planet, negotiate massive international trade agreements, as well as help our allies when they're being attacked. You know, these accomplishments would not be possible without cooperation on a massive scale. So the question is, are we inherently selfish? And is it only through our sort of conscious suppression of our selfish urges that we can cooperate with others? You know, the philosophical beliefs about our selfish human nature inspired many of the teachings defined in Christianity and many of the modern economic ideas. Now, you may be inclined to agree with these ideas. You know, everyone has heard stories of cheating and lying and stealing, all of which display the worst of human nature, where our selfish, greedy impulses reveal themselves. But the idea of our innate selfishness is being increasingly challenged. Insights from the behavioral sciences are beginning to challenge more and more the idea that greed is some kind of trait, characteristic of mankind. The scientists and the researchers are beginning to suggest that we have a cooperative instinct and that our selfish behavior only emerges as we begin to form strategies for our decisions. You know, as they study babies and toddlers, the researchers observe that they have a tendency to help each other right from the start. And researchers are concluding that instinctive responses sort of depend on which strategy, cooperation or selfish greed, which strategy has worked for us in the past. You know, a basketball team is a good example of learning cooperation. You know, most teams have a star player who may have a tendency to want the ball and score points. However, most basketball stars begin to understand that to continue winning games, they have to trust and cooperate with their teammates, pass to them more frequently. And although the star player may instinctively want to go it alone, he soon learns that cooperation brings more wins and avoids unhappiness from his teammates and criticism from the fans and observers and maybe even the possibility of being dropped by his coach. You know, it's for all these reasons that the star player will override his initial impulse and work for the team. Teamwork. We've all heard that word. Teamwork and cooperation. But stories of greed and ego just bombard us. There are other studies that have been begun to show that humans are inherently good. A recent study by the Common Cause Foundation found that a large majority, 74% of people, identify strongly with unselfish values than with selfish values. This means they're more interested in helpfulness and honesty and forgiveness and justice than in money, fame, status, and power. Their second finding in this study was that a simple majority, 78%, believe others to be more selfish than they really are. In other words, we believe people are more selfish than they really are. We make terrible mistakes about other people's minds and their objectives. You know, in an article in Frontiers in Psychology, it points out that behavior toward unrelated members of our species is spectacularly unusual when we compare it to other animals. You know, humans are ultra social. You know, we're possessed of an enhanced capacity for empathy, caring for others, and an unparalleled sensitivity to the needs of others. It's a unique level of concern about their welfare and creates an ability for us to create moral norms. You know, we don't see this in primates or other animals. You know, studies have discovered that children, you know, as young as 3 and 5 years old are inclined to help people if they perceive them to be suffering. And they want to see someone helped, whether they do it themselves or not. And it's, you know, this suggests that they're motivated by, these young 3 to 5 year olds are motivated by a general concern for other people's welfare rather than just a desire for them to look good. But I think we would all agree that the media, you know, the media that we all talk about worships wealth and power and sometimes even launches furious attacks on people who behave altruistically. You know, many of those who dominate public life have a peculiar fixation on fame and money and power. It's what drives them. Their extreme self-centeredness places them in a small minority, but because we see them everywhere, we assume that they're representative of humanity. Now, what I'm saying is that contrary to popular belief, most people are basically decent. Most people want to do good in their lives, to be useful, to make the world a better place. All other things being equal, most people will work for the good of society, their neighbors, and their loved ones. But what I'm about to tell you is what you already know. Things are not equal. Remember I said all things being equal. As we look around, it seems that people are regularly rewarded for behaving badly. Greedy, selfish, you know, self-promoting people get money and other rewards than those around them who are behaving honorably. At least this is the perception that most of us have. You know, it applies equally to everyone from plumbers to politicians. You know, another way to look at this is to say you have to pay people more to be bad than to be good. Yeah, people will be greedy and selfish for a price. Now, you have to, really, because of how God has created us, you have to compensate people for being evil. People will be good for free, but you have to compensate people to be evil. Here's some things to think about. You know, the for-profit sector has to pay market rates for its workers. But the nonprofit sector pays much less, if it pays at all. Pro-corporate think tanks pay high salary. Pro-public think tanks are usually staffed with volunteers. You know, it's a challenge to get people to go into teaching and nursing. These are tough jobs that require high levels of education. Why should people train for these tough jobs when they can go into sales with hardly any training at all and be paid more? You know, why should doctors serve rural communities' basic health care needs when the rewards for catering to the whims of the rich or the pharmaceutical industry are so much greater? These kinds of inequalities literally corrupt our society and actually fuel greed. And with today's levels of inequality, there's much more to be greedy for. There's much more to be greedy. You know, most people believe that Yes, there should be some amount of inequality in our society, but no one really knows what the right level of inequality is. Today, we have twice as much inequality compared to 50 years ago in pay levels and wealth. Is that a good thing? I think the obvious answer is no. Well, how much inequality is good? Whatever the answer is, it's less than we have now. Greed is not good. And high inequality is making all of us greedier than we should be, greedier than we could be. You know, would you leave a high-pressure professional job for the nonprofit sector? Probably not if it involved a 50% pay cut. Well, what if being involved in a good occupation involved just a 5% pay cut? We probably would all be better people. I just looked over a list available on the internet of the 20 richest people in America. The names on this list are familiar because the media glorifies them. At the top of the list is Elon Musk, with a net worth of over $250 billion. Following Musk is Jeff Bezos, with a net worth of $161 billion. And other individuals with a net worth over $100 billion are Larry Ellison and Warren Buffett, Larry Page of Google, Bill Gates of Microsoft, Sergio Brin with Google, and Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook, and Steve Ballmer of Facebook. Now, don't get me wrong about these billionaires. Each one of them has made astronomical charitable donations. However, let me assure you, their charitable donations have not made a dent in their accumulated wealth. What should worry all of us in this democratic society we call America is the growing disparity between the haves and the have-nots. The billionaires that I mentioned previously, they're in the position to do something about this. This inequality is dangerous for our country. The median income in the United States is a little over $44,000. Now, that means that half the people in the United States make less than $44,000, and the other half the people make more than $44,000. Most people in America think that you're rich if you make more than $100,000 a year. You know, and a slim 1% are able to earn more than $1 million a year. You know, but here's a sobering statistic. Approximately 47%, almost half, 47% of U.S. workers earn less than $30,000 per year. You begin to wonder. Scratch your head. At what point will there be an economic rebellion in this country caused by sheer greed? Many of us worry about this disparity. Now, as I begin to wind down this podcast, I think we all know that the morality of civilization does not change overnight. Capitalism is the economic engine of America. It's the most important aspect of our society. There's no point in trying to introduce all kinds of new rules to protect us from the excesses of capitalism. The truth is, the world is sick. The world is sick, and humanity suffers from a pathological, insatiable kind of greed. Greed is a disease that can destroy us. And let me just say this to you, God-fearing Christians, those who profess to be Christians, followers of Jesus Christ, we should be setting ourselves apart in a number of ways, and one of the ways is to reject the temptation
of greed.
It's like a cancer in our society. And as I discussed earlier, the sciences are beginning to prove that God created us with tendencies toward loving our neighbors and avoiding greed. That's how we were created. It's only when we are constantly rewarded for being greedy that we change. And the only solution to this is to rely on God. Rely on God. Thank you for listening to this podcast, and I hope you will listen to me again next week. May God bless you.